Think about the Delaware River today. You might cross it on your way down the shore, or maybe you fish in it, or take a trip to the waterfront for a concert or fireworks. Now think about what it was like 40 years ago. Smelly, dirty, devoid of fish. The river below Trenton was an eyesore and a hazard. On Wednesday, we learned how the Clean Water Act fixed it. Fish returned. Recreation boomed. In the final part of our series, Reviving the River, WHYY's Susan Phillips and Dana Bate report hidden dangers still lurk. We start our story with Dana Bate.
It's a beautiful Saturday afternoon, and Sean Brown is taking his two kids on a ferry ride from Camden across the Delaware to a festival on the banks of the river in Philadelphia. There's beer and food and crafts, the sort of fun Brown pictures when people talk about the river.
When I think of the Delaware River, I'm normally just thinking about it as where the waterfront is, so where a lot of the nice stuff in Camden is, and in Philadelphia, like Penn's Landing.
The idea that the Philadelphia or Camden waterfronts could draw crowds would have been unthinkable a few decades ago. Today, the river brings tourists to Spruce Street Harbor Park in Philadelphia and fishermen to its waters to catch shad, bass, walleye, and catfish. But Richard Pepino warns that there are still serious challenges to water quality. We just don't see them.
We've grabbed all the low-hanging fruit in that period, 72 to 82. A lot of the reasons we didn't want to be on the river were eliminated. And so the fruit that are out there now are smaller and trickier.
Pepino worked at the EPA for some 25 years. He spent most of them enforcing the Clean Water Act. But now, he has other concerns.
I worry about things that are hard to measure, like pharmaceuticals, personal care products, runoff with stormwater, pesticides, herbicides.
Those are called non-point source pollutants, meaning they don't come from a single polluter, like a chemical company or a wastewater treatment plant. Instead, they come from lots of sources, including many of us. The Clean Water Act doesn't address non-point source pollutants. To do so, it would need amendments. And the last time the law was significantly amended was 1987.
I got an 1987 telephone I want to sell to you. Or how about a 1987 camera? You want that? But yet, we try to manage today's problems with a law that hasn't been changed since 1987.
Lawmakers weren't even thinking about pharmaceuticals in the water in 1987, mostly because we didn't have the technology to detect them. But they were probably there then, too, because most of them come from us. When our bodies don't absorb some 30 to 90% of the drugs we take, and the rest passes through our bodies as waste and goes down the toilet and to the treatment plant. The Clean Water Act only requires plants to disinfect the waste, so most are not equipped to remove pharmaceuticals. To do that, plants would need to install high-tech systems like reverse osmosis or ozonation. Julie Becker of the University of the Sciences in Philadelphia says that probably isn't going to happen.
Anytime you upgrade a municipal plant, it's going to cost a lot of money. And there has to be both political will and social need with which to do this.
The traces of pharmaceuticals in the Delaware are very low, like a grain of sand in an Olympic-sized swimming pool. And so far, those levels don't put humans at risk. But the story is different when it comes to wildlife.
So we're seeing, for example, male fish changing over to become female fish. And this has to do more with the hormone kinds of things, from both birth control, from thyroid medicines, some of the lipids.
Some fish are also accumulating chemicals called PFAS. The chemicals help make products heat or stain resistant and are found in things like firefighting foam, flame retardants, and nonstick cookware. Scientists are still studying the health effects on animals and humans, but in the meantime, the federal government doesn't regulate them.
One thing the government does regulate under the Clean Water Act is sewage treatment. I'm Susan Phillips, and I wanted to know how that works, so I visited a plant in southwest Philadelphia. One thing that struck me right away was the number of plastic bottles showing up here. Inside this plant is a giant machine that plucks trash from incoming sewage and stormwater. Everything that gets flushed down the toilet or tossed into a storm drain at the end of your street ends up here.
When I started in 82, you never saw the plastic bottles. Now there's just a lot of plastic bottles, and that's so wasteful.
That's Deb McCarty, Philadelphia's water commissioner, who is standing next to what is called a bar screen. Today, it's full of plastic forks, Starbucks cups, and water bottles, which get carted off to a landfill. But a lot of plastics still end up in the river, flow toward the ocean, get degraded into tiny pieces, and eaten and absorbed by the fish. Some of these bits of microplastics come from personal care products like toothpaste. And just like pharmaceuticals, plastics aren't regulated. Scientists have just begun to study these microplastics, and they're unsure of the impacts to human and animal health. But it's not just tiny bits of plastics that have researchers and regulators worried. One of the greatest threats to river health is climate change, which few people thought about in 1972 when the Clean Water Act passed.
So we need to be preparing for floods that we haven't seen before, and also droughts we haven't seen before. So it's at both extremes.
Carol Collier is the senior advisor of watershed management at the Academy of Natural Sciences. She says heavier rain events and floods could overwhelm the current sewage treatment plants and send raw sewage into rivers. Rising seas could mean salt water moving further up the Delaware River, possibly reaching the drinking water intakes. Global warming also means warmer rivers. Collier says all these factors could hurt the recently restored fish and mussel populations in the Delaware, including the sturgeon, which have just started to spawn in the river.
There are 70 species of fish now in the Delaware estuary up by Philadelphia. That's huge. You know, we need to make sure the standards are stringent enough to protect those new endangered species that are coming back into the river. Philadelphia used to be the caviar capital of the United States. Isn't that incredible?
In the early 1970s, a new environmental movement led to bipartisan support for regulation and funding projects that helped clean up waterways. But Collier doesn't see that kind of political momentum today at the federal level, especially when it comes to future challenges. For now, she says it will be up to local municipalities and states to take the lead. I'm Susan Phillips.
And I'm Dana Bate, WHYY News.